another episode of The Foxhole Companion with me, Dan Stewart.
And me, Simon Rance.
Oh, let's just say from the get-go, Simon, we're a bit ashamed.
Yeah, sorry, everyone. And thanks for your messages and tweets. We are back in the war room. Basically, my wall fell down, as some of you know, and my back garden looked like Stalingrad. I've been repairing that because I can't afford the builders. So I've had to put the fate of my family before you guys, and I am ashamed. But from now
Priorities, my friend, priorities. Yeah. We're living in dark and turbulent times.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite as turbulent as those facing Norway in 1940.
No.
But that's what we're looking at today. So, yes, huge apologies. We've been absent for well over 4 weeks. But we're back, and not only back, we're in the same room, Simon.
Yes, it's very nice. As I said, we're back in our cabinet war room, which
is going to make editing it so much easier.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Oh, thank God.
So tonight's film is The King's Choice, which is a movie made in 2016, and we're still in the arena of Scandinavia, where we were for the last two episodes. We are at, well, April 8th / April 9th, aren't we?
Yeah. So what's interesting, the link between our last three movies, April 9th...
Commando Strike at Dawn. How would you forget that name? Your favourite film
Commando
ever?
Commando Strike at Dawn. And this movie, The King's Choice, all take place... Well, no, because Commando Strike at Dawn doesn't really...
Commando Strike at Dawn...
It sort of covers four years, doesn't it?
It covers the war.
Yeah.
And pre-war, too.
But April 9th and this film are set at the same time.
Yeah.
Same day.
Yeah. But April 9th, the movie, is obviously about Denmark and its fantastical bicycle squad. And this is about Norway.
Yeah.
So this film, as I said, directed in 2016 by a chap called Erik Popper, or Poppy, or Popov.
And I'm going to do my Norwegian now.
Please.
Erik Popper.
Okay, that's not... maybe.
I just made that up. What
anyway,
do you think?
Well, incredible. That is why you get paid the big bucks.
wish.
But there is a link. Tenuous, yes, but there is a link to Dan through this director.
So he's not directed a huge amount, but he was a cinematographer as well as a producer. He seems to be quite prolific in Norway. But it is a small country with a small population. So I guess if you're talented and know your stuff, you're gonna do all right. But he directed a film in 2013 before The King's Choice called A Thousand Times Goodnight with Juliette Binoche. And those of you who are Game of Thrones fans, Nikolai Coster-Waldau.
Oh, it's the dastardly chap, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Do you know Jamie Lannister?
Jamie Lannister, yeah. So, what's the link?
Well, those of you who follow me on Twitter will know that basically half my Twitter feed is just tweeting about football. And Nikolai and I are in the same fantasy football league table.
Amazing.
And I'm going to say this right now. I beat him. I was in eighth. He was in ninth.
Well,
come on!
I don't know what to say. Is this a Leeds United fantasy thing? Is he a Leeds fan like you?
Yeah, so it's mostly Leeds fans and sort of celebrities.
Okay.
So even ex-footballers as well.
Okay, but it's Leeds.
It is Leeds.
So he's a Leeds fan.
Yeah, well, I think we have one scum fan.
When you say scum...
Sorry, for those
of
you
Man
who
United?
Don't speak... Is it Man United?
Well, it's scum to
Come
you.
Come on.
Tottenham would be scum to me. Anyway, we digress.
We don't really need to go into a huge amount of history because we did cover Operation Wasserburg, which was Germany's invasion. What?
No, brilliant.
That's how it's spelled. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
Wasserbung. Wasserbung.
Okay.
Easy for you to say. Which was the German invasion of Norway. We did cover it a little bit in Commando Strike at Dawn.
I'd say we covered it quite a lot in that, to be honest.
But this is looking at it from a completely opposite side. So in Commando Strike at Dawn, I mean, laugh at the title all you like, but it really was, for its time, given that it was made during the war, a really personal look at what the population of Norway had to endure at the hands of the German occupiers.
Yeah.
This is basically a true story which looks at the Norwegian royal family and the 2 or 3 days following the German invasion. And I'm going to say it right there. For some reason, I was thinking the King's Choice. It sounds a bit like the King's Speech. I like you know, grenades and machine guns and tanks and fighters. And I was like, oh, this doesn't look. Just doesn't look very good.
And Dan's very much of the opinion with the stuff that we watched. Just like, is it a war film? Meaning.
Are there people shooting at each other?
Yeah, not just being set during the war, like a drama set during wartime. Is it a war film? And this is both, isn't it?
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
And not only that, I loved it.
So did I. I thought it was amazing.
What a film.
Yeah, it's been one of those films that's been sitting on my watch list for probably 18 months to 2 years, and I've never got around to watching it. And I'm so glad I did. I'm so glad we've included it in our series because it is dynamite. The acting's amazing, direction's amazing, cinematography.
Incredible. I
mean, the budget couldn't have been massive, but it looks like a big budget. It's so well made, so well edited. Even from the title sequence, you know immediately you're in for something quite special. The soundtrack
is so
atmospheric.
That sort of throbbing pulse that goes through it.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And yet the performances, you know, we'll speak about them again and again and again through it because... apart from maybe the two leads, which is the king and his son, the crown prince, right?
Yeah.
Everyone is amazing. There's a terrific performance.
Do you think they're not amazing?
No. I'm saying they're exceptional.
Yeah.
But so we'll talk, you know, and because then, I mean, apart from them, it's an ensemble piece.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense.
So, and each area is so well crafted. And it's not a short film, but not once are you thinking about going for a wee-wee break. It's edge of your seat stuff in action and emotion. And there are so many parts which stick out, and I hope we can remember them all to go through them. I think
you know what we need to do.
I'm not rewatching it.
They have like Rotten Tomatoes scale of Rotten Tomatoes.
We could have urinals.
Just have... just have a row of urinals. This gets easily 8 out of 10 urinals for me.
Oh yeah.
Even think about my bladder once.
No, it is brilliant.
Usually, you know, 12 times, he's up and down. Well, keep pausing it and rewinding so you can remember where you were.
If we're having a beer, forget about it. Anyway, again, so, more digression.
So basically, the difference between this and Commando Strike at Dawn, which is obviously fictional, but is looking at how the German occupation affected the citizens of Norway. This is what's so thrilling about this is it is a view, almost minute by minute view of the invasion of Norway from the point of view of the king, his family, the government around them, and
the army,
and the army, and basically their flight,
and not only that,
from the capital, from Oslo, to escape the grasp of the Germans who wanted nothing more than to capture the king and his family.
Yeah, there's a wonderful performance by a chap called Karl Markovich who stars as Kurt Brauer. Brauer is the German diplomat.
He's the ambassador. Yeah. He's the German ambassador to Norway.
To Norway, yeah, which is a bit... He is wonderful, and so it's very much from his point of view as well. And he is really trying to stop an invasion, from happening. So you've got
not a violent one anyway.
No, exactly. And so there you have your good German character.
Yeah.
Which we seem to see so many of. He is tremendous, that chap.
And we do actually have a stereotypical Nazi as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's got the lot, mate.
Isn't his name Hammer as well?
The actor?
No, the character.
Is it?
I think it's Hammer.
Ooh, I like that. There's my cast list. Have a little look. Anyway, so to quickly fill in, we talked on Commander Strike at Dawn about how Norwegian forces basically put up an almost futile defence, a much better defence than the bicycle units of Denmark, I have to say, who capitulated almost immediately. Here's an interesting thing, though, about Norway. And we sort of touched on it before. What's really interesting is that Vidkun Quisling, who led the fascist party of Norway, had already met with the Germans and, you know, basically said, as soon as you're here, I'll be your puppet.
Yeah. Yeah,
and do whatever you want. And we touched on in the last episode the awful things that the Germans got up to in Norway.
Yeah.
Long story short, the Germans wanted the iron ore in Norway. They wanted the seaport so they could interfere with the British shipping in the North Atlantic and the North Sea. It was obviously vitally important to both sides. The British had thought the month before about putting some divisions, some British infantry divisions in Norway, and at the last minute changed their mind and just decided to mine the waters around the German, the Norwegian ports, which ultimately backfired on them because that's exactly what the Germans used as an excuse to invade. They didn't call it invading. They said they were coming to the rescue of their Nordic brothers and sisters in the face of British imperialism.
Yeah, great PR stunt, basically, and total lie.
Yeah, so total lie. And so, I mean, that's enough about the history, I think, because we did cover it before. I'd just like to say, the thing that made this film so powerful to me, that I was so surprised about, because I didn't think it would be as gripping as it was, is how the film creates this tension from the very first frame.
Yeah, yeah.
From much like our favourite Polish film,
Westerplatte, yeah,
where you get the sense of this giant beast waiting in the darkness.
Well, there's that amazing scene, right? I think it's probably about the third scene in, isn't it? When you've got the you've got the fjord,
the
fortress in the fjord, and then you have these destroyers just creeping out of it, all blackout.
Yeah,
it's absolutely brilliant.
There's a couple of things that really jump out at the beginning of this film. Is you see Oslo at the beginning, all lit up, and it looks like this beautiful city, and the palace at the top of the hill.
Yeah, because it opens on the 8th,
yes,
doesn't it? It opens the day before the invasion.
But as the Norwegians at the time knew, and the characters in this film know, is that the Germans are up to something, and everyone's on super high alert. They're starting to get messages from Denmark. In fact, the first... It's so good! The first time we see the king of Norway, he's sort of curled up in a ball on the floor because he's got this horrible bad back, and he's on permanent hold, which is hilarious because it's 1940. Mm. He's like on perma hold trying to get through to his brother, who was the king of Denmark, and it's already too late, basically. Yeah. And this is a little bit of history we do need to touch on, which is great. The film actually opens with sort of newsreel footage. And here's the mad thing about the Norwegian royal family, is they were elected.
Yeah.
The country of Norway voted, and they voted for King Haakon VII, who was Danish.
Yeah.
So the film opens with this sort of Pathé news footage of King Haakon VII arriving in Oslo with his family and his little son, who is, we're going to then see,
Olaf
the Crown Prince. And so he was basically invited. He and his family were invited, but his brother was the king of Denmark.
Yeah.
Who basically, you know, within hours had capitulated to the Germans. And we see King Haakon in Norway curled up on a in a ball on the floor of his office, trying desperately to get a hold of his brother on the phone. And at this point, we keep cutting in between this rather older officer who's in this fort on a fjord somewhere, who look like they've got some massive guns and a lot of very young kids who don't seem to know what they're doing. And all the lights go out in Oslo.
Yeah, blackout in Oslo. That's incredible. So that's... and that's then the cannons roar.
Mm.
And they take out one of the destroyers, don't they?
I'm trying to think of what film it reminds me of.
What that slow creeping?
The fact that somebody's looking... So this older officer is getting
reports... Longest Day. Longest Day.
It is Longest Day.
When the German...
When the German officer's in his bunker and he's like, no, nothing's there. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
And he's the chap from Battle of the Bulge, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The footman?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Robert Shaw's...
Footman, yeah.
Batman,
sorry.
Yeah, so there's this old officer looking through the fog into the fjord, and his soldiers are giving him reports that from other forts they're seeing ships. And there's various people going, no, it can't possibly be ships. Mm. No, it is. And then suddenly materializing like phantoms out of the fog are these battleships.
It's very much like the the title sequence of Das Boot.
Mm.
When you know something's there because you can hear the and then all of a sudden it's just right on the screen. It's amazing. It's beautiful. It's so beautifully shot because the contrast in color from
that sort of almost black and white.
Yeah, it's gray and black. And it's like, oh, it's so good. It's
and
really
then the
great.
Gun explodes.
Yeah.
And then you see a second later this battleship erupt in flame.
Yeah.
And they're in a firefight with German battleships in a fjord.
It is amazing. It's brilliant.
Which, by the way, historically, they did sink quite a few of.
Okay.
They put a serious dent in the invasion plans
of
Germany.
I imagine that's why the German command got much, much tougher on them. Because... we've got this guy, Brouwer, trying to organise some kind of ceasefire and say, like, can't we just take the country peacefully?
Mm.
And he is told in return by none less than Adolf himself.
Oh, well, we'll come to that because it is such a great moment. So there are these three stories sort of running in tandem. You've got the royal family. Mm. You have the German ambassador to... Norway
and the squaddies
and the soldiers, and they really interconnect in a really pleasing and sort of fulfilling way. Here's a quick thing. So our King Haakon the Seventh, did you know this? Norwegian for king is Kong, K-O-N-G.
Yeah, I knew that.
So in Norway, is the film King Kong King Kong? Kong Kong.
King King, I don't know.
King King Kong Kong.
Well, I don't understand. No, surely if... No, it would be Kong.
Just Kong.
No. You mean it should be called Kong Kong?
Well, the movie's called King Kong. So in Norway, would that film have been called Kong Kong?
We should be looking this up. This is brilliant.
Any Norwegian listeners out there...
Well, we've got one. Who lives in Norway, I'm sure.
Oh,
John Harmon.
Yeah, we should talk to John about
it. Yeah, we should.
Is King Kong, all the movies, because there's one that's four now, is it just called Kong Kong?
And do you say that four times for each film? So King Kong 4 would be...
Is it Kong versus Godzilla?
Kong Kong.
I don't know. Anyway, Kong Haakon the Seventh is played by Jesper Christensen, who is... amazing.
Yeah,
now, those
fabulous.
Of you who are James Bond fans will know Jesper Christensen because he plays Mr. White.
Oh, yeah.
From Casino Royale, from the Daniel Craig Casino Royale onwards until the present.
Okay.
Although I think he was killed in the last one, actually.
I didn't make it through the last one, I'm sorry.
No, that's just unforgivable. So Jesper Christensen is Mr. White. He sort of is the... silent figure in the background of all these films who seems to be pulling the strings. So what's the film after Casino Royale?
After Casino Royale, it's one
is
with,
it Quantum
it's
of Solace?
Yeah.
Quantum of Solace. Is it Quantum of Solace?
Yes, it is. The one with Olga.
Quantum of Solace opens with James Bond being chased around the mountains of northern Italy.
There's a lot of AK-47s going off in that.
Lots of that going on. And he's got Jesper Christensen in his boot because Casino Royale ends with James Bond shooting him in the leg and basically saying, my name's Bond, James Bond, and cut to credits.
Okay.
And I think Quantum of Solace starts directly after that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's your James Bond link, which is interesting because...
Oh, no, here we go. Go on.
No, because in April 9th, the film of the Danish, the German invasion of Denmark, we have Mads Mikkelsen's brother...
Yeah, and Mads Mikkelsen's in Casino Royale.
It's all 6 degrees of...
The stars of a line.
It's all so exciting. I'm so excited, Simon. yeah, the cast of this are phenomenal.
Absolutely, yeah. And the next big thing for me is that after said invasion, the royal family get evacuated. Okay.
Almost immediately.
Yeah, and then they find themselves on what has to be the nicest train on earth.
Well, it's the royal train.
Well, I don't care. I've never seen a train like that. I bet our royal family don't have a train like that. It makes the Orient Express look like the Northern Line.
It's a posh train, isn't it?
It's amazing. So much space.
Well, and this train doesn't just have the royal family on it. It has the entire Norwegian Parliament on it as well.
Yeah.
Because they have a little meeting.
Oh, the cabinet are on it, aren't they?
The cabinet are on it.
Yeah.
And this is the amazing thing. So, almost immediately... The Norwegian government is basically self-imposed exile. They flee. And it was in this power vacuum that Quisling just walks straight in. And there's even a scene where they're listening on the radio where Quisling announces himself as the new leader of Norway.
Yeah. So the cabinet and parliament meet in secret with the king at a theatre. And that's when... This is the first of the king's choices, right?
Yeah.
Where he has to decide whether...
To surrender
or
not to surrender. Now, an interesting little side note that just adds another layer to the tension is that we're told quite early on by the king's son, who is the crown prince, Crown Prince Olaf, who is played brilliantly by Anders Basamo Christensen.
He's wonderful.
He's so good.
Yeah.
God, he's good. He's the guy that is sort of this... He's a bit petulant. He's sort of a Hal. He's like a Henry V.
Yeah, Prince Hal.
He's
totally.
Prince Hal to his much older dad's king.
Well, he's Henry V, as opposed to... Prince Hal was like the piss with Falstaff, didn't he?
He did. He liked to get about a bit. And have a good time. Whereas this guy, he's all for... He doesn't want to surrender. He wants to fight.
He wants to sign up for active duty, doesn't
he? Yeah, I mean, because they're all in uniform. All the royal family are in uniform, much like ours are. Except that ours, you know, with the exception of... No, I won't go there.
Merca!
So most of the royal family are in uniform. And... Yeah, the Crown Prince, he announces in one of the many vehicles they're escaping in that he's done running. He wants to turn around and fight.
Yeah.
Another thing he's very keen to stress to his dad is that the Norwegian government, this current cabinet, are not particularly friendly to the monarchy. They're socialist and they generally think that they're a dead duck.
Yeah.
And a drain on resources, and they don't really feel like they... So they have a sort of hostile...
Yeah, there's a bit of conflict there, but I think that's what's interesting about the film, although it's kind of an obvious thing, but, you know, it did happen. You have these two conflicting philosophies that have to come together for the greater good. I mean, admittedly, it doesn't end very well, but they do come together, right?
Yes. They do. Now, while all this is going on, while the royal family are fleeing, and It's a big royal family. Yeah. There are wives. There are loads of little kids. There's that really powerful and upsetting scene.
Upsetting.
Where the crown prince has to put his family and children in a car to make a break for Sweden.
Yeah, while Olaf and the king stay in Norway. That is so moving. It is amazing. I remember turning to you and I was like almost starting to blubber.
I know.
I was like, oh my God.
Because the kids are crying.
And the kids are amazing actors. And it's totally believable. And, you know, it's almost just like maybe Eric Popper did a Ken Loach like on the Kez kid.
And actually
clipped him round the ear and said, you'll never see your mummy again or something like that.
Because they're just bawling, aren't they?
And there's a wonderful part when he's about to send them off and then he stops the car.
And he opens the door again, doesn't he?
He goes and he kisses them one more time and then he goes, right, that's it, good.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, it's so dark.
It's powerful. It really is. Whilst all that's going on, we keep cutting back to the German ambassador's office. Mm. Now, we've met the German ambassador briefly when he meets with... You get the sense that there's this... In the Norwegian government, there's a lot of players and none of them are really on the same side. Mm. So the foreign minister that the German ambassador meets with to sort of say, by the way, we're not invading, we're sort of coming to help you out against to fight British imperialism, is not really on the same side as the prime minister. Mm. He's a bit pro-German, so he says, I've got to talk to the cabinet. We see him go through a door. He comes back out and he says, no, we're not going to capitulate. You know, the British are our friends and we're bang up for it.
And that part's really tragic for Brouwer, because he's like, you know, his job is a diplomat and diplomacy is about finding peace. And there's no way he can find peace because his options are ridiculous. His options are, well, the Germans have invaded, but honest gov, we don't really want to hurt anyone. It's just, well, why are you? And it's like, why do you keep dropping bombs? It's just like, he's got no answer because he is in a real appalling situation because he does not agree with his government.
Yeah.
Who he is paid to represent.
It's played by Kurt Brouwer, the German ambassador, is played by Karl Markovics.
Yeah, he's great.
And he's so good. He's got the face where if you wanted to, you could see him playing a real Nazi thug.
With
that broken nose and that sort of flattened face.
Yeah, I agree with you. But at the same time, do you remember I said, blimey, Stan Laurel's done some pudding. He looks like Stan Laurel after a week-long bender.
Wow. But that's true, though, because he's got sort of a tragicomic face, hasn't he?
Yeah.
The poor old German ambassador has got so much on his plate because you get the sense that he's not getting the whole story from the German government. He's being told, do this, do this, do this. And he's trying to do what he's told. But at the same time, you get the sense that he's a man who's deeply affectionate for the Norwegian people. In fact, he makes a speech to the filthy German Nazi officer who keeps sticking his head in his office.
Who's essentially overtaken his building.
Yeah, and is basically gone, you've got, you know, one chance to fix this, otherwise I'm sending in the troops.
Yeah, basically, your diplomacy has been militarized.
Yeah, and he says to this fella at one point, he goes, my children were born here. Mm. You know, he obviously has a deep sort of connection to the Norwegian people and the
country
of Norway.
His wife, not so much.
Yeah, it's hard. He's got so much going on. The poor fella.
That's a really interesting part of the film. Their relationship's really interesting because you can take of it, I think, what you want. Whether they're being pushed apart due to their relationship, due to having a child, both being away from the fatherland, whether it's that, or whether she's fed up with him trying to act as some kind of peacekeeper and she agrees with Hitler.
Yeah, you know. That's what I got.
Yeah,
that's
I know. I don't know. I think it's a bit of... I think it's the fact that she is far from home. She wants to be back home, which, of course, you really don't 5 years later.
No, you don't.
But I was of the opinion that she wants to go home. She wants to raise... You know, she wants her family back there to raise her child. And she's kind of fed up with him playing Dr. Diplomacy.
Yeah.
Because it's a lie.
It is a lie.
Because, you know.
And he won't accept it because what the one thing you really get from Kurt Brower, the ambassador, is that he actually, sadly, really believes in peace.
Mm.
He totally believes that he can, if he just gets the chance to talk to the king, if somebody can just hand him the phone, he spends most of the time running around Oslo going, please, can I speak to somebody? He's desperate to speak to somebody in power who he can just say, look, it's going to be okay. If you just do this, this, and this, I promise you, no one will get hurt.
Yeah.
No, there won't be any fighting. Please. And he's begging for peace. And so much so that when the Nazis actually arrive in his embassy, and the stereotypical Nazi officer walks in and goes, right, I'm taking over.
Yeah. He's scary.
He is scary.
Yeah.
That, you know, basically the Nazi officer hands him an ultimatum. He goes, right, you've got till midnight, and then I'm sending in the paratroopers. If you can't get this country under control and to get Norway to surrender, I'm sending in the troops. And he calls Berlin. He goes, right, well, we'll see about that. I have a phone straight to Berlin. So he picks up the phone and he's talking to
Ribbentrop. Yeah.
The foreign minister, right?
Yeah, who's made the pact with Molotov.
And he's saying, look, my office is full of Nazi soldiers. Just give me a little bit of time. As soon as I get hold of the king, I know I can negotiate a peace. I can give you the country without any bloodshed. But there's this background thing, right, where Quisling has already announced himself as the leader of Norway.
Mm.
And you get the sense from the king... you get the sense from the king, from the Norwegian cabinet, from everybody, including the German ambassador, that Quisling is a right bastard.
Yeah.
And nobody likes him.
And not particularly intelligent.
Yeah. He's a thug.
Yeah.
Who's basically had a coup. He's taken over. And the German ambassador's wife's saying, go talk to Quisling. He's in charge now. And he's like, no, I won't. And he calls up, then he says to Ribbentrop, if you can just give me some time, I can negotiate this peace, but you've got to get rid of Quisling. He's a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And the phone sort of, you hear some rustling on the phone and this voice comes on and goes, hello, Ambassador. I think actually we're going to stick with Quisling. And it's weird because the voice isn't doing anything weird. But the second you heard it, Simon and I looked at each other and were like, oh, it's Hitler!
It's Hitler, oh my God. And Brower's reaction is amazing. Immediately, he just stands to attention on the phone.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh!
It is such a powerful moment.
So scary.
It's so menacing. Whoever did that little bit of voice work
was
incredible because you hear the shift in the tone from Ribbentrop, who's like, well, you know, we'll see what we can do, but, you know, I think perhaps it's the best way is just to send in the troops. And
the voice actor's name is Udo Schenk.
It is chilling, that moment. You almost realise immediately that is Adolf Hitler on the phone. You snatch the handpiece away from Ribbentrop and is like, listen up, Mr. Ambassador. I'm sure you're going to do the right thing.
Yeah.
But we quite like Quisling over here in Berlin.
He's our man. Yeah.
So,
and also, it's just like, how can we negotiate peace with people that fire cannons at us.
Yeah.
And it's like,
And he's like, well, but you see us not have invaded.
I know. So that's terrible, because that's when the penny drops for Brower. It's just like, oh.
Oh, I'm screwed here.
It's just, it's an invasion, and it's cloak and dagger.
Cue that moment for his wife to come in and start giving him an earful. And she basically really gets in his face and is like, stop messing about. This isn't about diplomacy anymore. Go see Quisling and stop being an idiot. And he slaps her in the face.
Yeah.
And you just know, and like the whole office stops.
Oh, yeah.
And you can see instantly he goes, oh, shit.
And then a few seconds later, the absolute horrible Nazi pops in and goes like, is everything okay? And it's like, what, you pretending to like him now? Is it, he's just loving it, stirring it up. It's just, it's
horrible.
He's
so his wife storms out. Brower is left chasing. There's a convoy of buses, like coaches.
That's because they've left to invade, right?
Get in position to invade. But weirdly, all the troops are on coaches. Mm. I guess they've just requisitioned them. And we get this tragic moment where Brower is basically chasing them up the street, going, stop, please stop. Give me some time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really powerful. And so we keep cutting back to the royal family. Their wives and children have left.
Yeah,
and then the safety of Sweden.
And then you have a really wonderful segment, which is the private Seberg, the young kid.
Yeah,
and he meets the king. Do you remember with the salute?
Yeah,
that's a bit earlier on. But anyway, their station. I mean, they are kids, right?
Yeah.
Even their lieutenant's a kid.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God.
They don't even have helmets.
But the shootout is amazing of the invasion of that bar, that massive shootout.
So this little kid, Seberg, and his fellow soldiers have been given the job to create a roadblock to give the king enough time to escape.
Yeah.
And there's not many of them. They've got rifles.
They do amazing, though.
Pretty well. But
But the whole point of it was a stopgap. They knew they couldn't beat them.
Yeah, so it was sort of a suicide mission.
It was incredibly brave of these young guys. And some of them get away and retreat, but Seberg gets shot.
He gets blown up by a grenade.
Yeah. That's right. He shoots a German soldier.
Who
but
throws
gets,
a grenade at the same
gets
time.
It, but gets it in the neck from the grenade.
And his company basically hightail it. And his mate's left going, we can't leave him there. He's bleeding out.
So they leave him with a civilian. The bravest civilian on earth, I've got to say.
Yeah,
who does stay with him.
Yeah.
Carries him for a bit, stays with him, puts his hands up. And it's just like, oh my God. I mean, it's just like, I think I might have pegged it.
This actor that they got to play this, Arthur Hakalati, who plays Frederick Seberg, while they're setting up this rather flimsy roadblock and positioning the two machine guns that they've got and digging trenches in the snow, the king shows up.
Yeah.
And there's this great moment where he winds down his window.
Keeps saluting.
And the kid's just saluting nonstop, it's like, oh, hello. Oh, the king. Oh, my God.
It's very sweet.
And he says, what's your name, son? And he goes, Frederick Seberg. And he goes, listen, we really, really appreciate what you're doing for your country. And you can see the kid's absolutely made up.
He's brilliant. And I suppose it's that inspiration which turns him
into a bit of a war hero.
Makes him this total war hero. And of course, this is based on a true character as well.
Yeah.
And he saw out the war, and I believe is still alive, is he not?
Amazing. Because he did get completely blown up by a grenade.
Yeah.
They leave him in a barn with a civilian. And when the Germans actually arrive, this is the fabulous bit, because the Norwegians don't really have an army. But the Germans aren't convinced of that. They think that there may be thousands of them with tanks and guns and whatnot.
That's right, so he lies to him, doesn't
he? Yeah, so the German puts a gun to his head. He's already bleeding out all over this hayloft.
And he tells him we have 200 machine guns
and two divisions.
And battalions.
Yeah. And the German goes, I knew it!
Everyone
run away! Yeah.
And then the civilian who's been looking after Sebo says, like, is this Jew? And he goes like,
no.
No. And I thought, well, that's the end of him. He's dead. You know, he dies a hero. But it turns out he...
Because we were gutted, weren't we?
Yeah, we loved him. But it turns out that he survived the war and, I believe, is still alive.
The son finally says goodbye to the king.
Mm-hmm.
Because the king has decided, we have these couple of scenes. They're meeting in farmhouses. I mean, the cabinet. Norwegian cabinet and whoever is part of the government that's fled and the entire royal family are basically shacking up in houses.
Yeah, yeah.
In the Norwegian countryside. And they have one meeting in a theatre.
Yeah,
don't they? Where the king basically makes a statement and he goes, I'm not abdicating. I'm not going to surrender this country. This is my country, and we will
fight.
But
also that the Prime Minister tries to resign, doesn't he?
Yeah, the Prime Minister tries to resign. Nobody lets him.
No, sorry, mate, you're in this one. And it's like, oh.
They just, after being, they're strafed by the German Luftwaffe, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Luftwaffe, they're bombed. They have to run into the woods. And, we get this moment where civilians, royal family, cabinet members are all one stream of humanity trying to escape the bombing.
Very Scandinavian, that part. It's just like, look at us all mucking in together.
Yeah.
You know, the rest, you know, it's kind of like two fingers up to every other royal family. It's just like, this is what a royal family should do, be with its people in strife. And it's like, yeah, fair enough.
Well,
they sold me. I mean, they're my favourite royal family ever.
Ever.
They're amazing.
Absolutely. And it was interesting because you did start to make parallels between this royal family who are going to refuse to give up, who are going to fight to the end. The son wants to join the regular troops and, you know, mm-hmm. do his best, with what we know about our royal family at the time. And, we've all seen the King's Speech, right? And we know sort of what extremes they were in, but they were never really tested. They never had to make that decision, given that they're all German.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I said it. We're going to make up this name, Windsor.
Windsor.
The other Windsors.
Next.
So we're going to cut forward now, because we don't want to ruin it for you, because we really, really recommend that everyone gets onto Amazon and watches this.
Yes, please do.
Do you remember you thought it was insisting it was Netflix?
Well, that was the first half hour of our night.
Searching for a film that didn't exist. It's on Amazon.
It's on Netflix. It's on Amazon.
So, Brower finally, I think he goes to a government office somewhere in Oslo, and there's some poor bloke in his shirt sleeves surrounded by just papers and desks with all the drawers pulled out. And he says, Brower's like, where is everyone? And he goes, well, I'm it.
Yeah.
It's some young guy who's basically trying to clean up.
And he goes, and then he says, we're trying, it's like, I'm the diplomat and I'm trying to
find, I've got to speak to the king.
I'm trying to do a peace settlement. And he goes, that's a bit rich, isn't it? It's just like, what, with bombs? Because the place has turned into the Blitz. So, and he has to find, he has to meet with the king. Brower has to meet with the king. That's the only acceptance that's the only notion that Hitler is going for, right? So it's like, you must get the king.
Hitler wants the king so bad.
Yeah, and he does. He finally, they organise it and they have their meeting. But first of all, the king is like, I'm not meeting him alone without the cabinet.
Yeah.
And he's with the cabinet, and he said, And Brower at that point is like, oh, okay, then there's nothing that can be done.
Well, but you get the sense that what a good negotiator he is. Because, first of all, Brower's been, you know, he turns up at this Norwegian army checkpoint. He gets out of his car. He's immediately blindfolded and taken to this secret location where the king and the cabinet are. He walks into this room and it's obviously rather uncomfortable, given the fact that he's the sole representative of the Third Reich.
Yeah.
And he's facing the entire Norwegian cabinet and the King of Norway. And he's like, hello.
Hello.
Do you mind if we speak in German? Because I don't really know much Norwegian.
Yeah, which is not great for an ambassador in a foreign country. You should be fluent.
You probably should.
Surely. Surely that's the first sign on the job. It's like, can you speak Norwegian? Nine.
And
then you can't do it.
No, and he says, well, look, the Führer insists that the only way this is going to happen is if I speak to the king alone. And the king goes, no, I'm not going to stay in a room alone with you, you maniac.
Yeah.
But this is where you get the negotiator, is he sort of thinks about it, and he very purposefully closes his little briefcase and goes, all right, I'm off then. And it's the king that goes, wait, stop, all right. You guys leave, I'll talk to him. And then we finally, what this film has been building to is this confrontation between king and diplomat. The diplomat, I mean, Brower, we all know, Brower hasn't got anything to negotiate with. Because they've already invaded. He can't offer him peace. And he basically says, look, the Führer would like you to surrender. No harm will come to your family. You can be a sort of royal family, but without any power. And Quisling is the guy. There's no choice about that. He's going to be in charge. And he looks out the window, doesn't he, the king? He sort of looks at the snowy landscape of Norway, and he turns around, and we're not going to spoil it for you, but delivers a great speech.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Which is basically, in a word, no.
Yeah.
And we see Brower return back to Oslo. He goes back to his ambassadorial apartments. Well, he walks into the embassy, and it's now fully filled with Nazis.
Oh, it's just swastika. His office, swastikas hanging everywhere.
He goes to go in his office, and it's just the horrible stereotypical Nazis there with his feet up, and he might
as well be doing a panto laugh at that point.
Yeah,
going I've almost had your wife too.
And even the ambassador's secretary is now obviously working for the Nazi.
Yeah.
And he goes into his private apartments, and all he sees on the floor are packed suitcases.
Yeah.
And that's basically the end of the film.
Yeah. Well, we haven't given away all
too
of
much.
It, so yeah, please watch it. When you've got a spare couple of hours, it is absolutely amazing. It has, it's got a stereotypical Nazi, which is he a colonel? He is Colonel Hammer, I think. I think it's Hammer.
Yeah, it's not Oberst Lieutenant Hartwig Pohlmann, is it?
Oh, it might be.
Hmm. That was a perfect pronunciation, by the way. I'm sure all our German listeners will be like, that sounded like you were German.
Right. And so he's got the stereotypical Nazi. Best Death Award? Has he got Best Death Award?
Well, Best Near Death.
Is
Seberg.
Seberg, right, okay. Yeah, but it's
because he's such a little kid.
Yeah, okay.
So, and he gets blown to pieces.
So we've got a new award called the Best Near Death Award.
Yeah, Best Heroic Almost Fatal Wounding.
Yeah, so it's like a Best PG Death Award.
Hmm.
No, it's not.
Yeah, well, it's not very PG even.
No, okay.
So, yeah, and, I hugely recommend this film.
So what are you going to give that out of 5?
Oh, I think it's got to be a 4 again.
Okay. Do you
go
reckon?
On. Yeah.
Okay. I think it's a 5.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Our first 5.
No, Vestaplatte was a 5 as well.
Oh, we keep forgetting Vestaplatte. We love Vestaplatte.
So I don't know which one I like more. I think I might like this more than Vestaplatte as well. I gave it 5 stars. I thought Vestaplatte was amazing. But I don't think it was as emotionally engaging as this. Because that was much more like
a war film.
It's military, really. Yeah. And this is just, I can't believe I hadn't seen it. I'm so pleased I have seen it. I've told everyone I know who's mildly interested in war films, apart from Dan, to see it.
But this is a great thing about it, is it's not just a war film. There are some great battle sequences in it.
Mm.
But this sort of diplomatic game that gets played in these little farmhouses and
so stressful.
Outhouses.
It's quite a stressful watch, but not in that kind of, not in a kind of uncut gems way. I mean, as in, you really feel for the people who are running around, especially Brower, trying to keep a lid on things.
Mm.
And it just comes across amazingly. And it's tragic because we know what happens.
Yeah.
And,
But here's the interesting thing. So Denmark, who the king abdicated straight away, there was very little fighting. I think there were maybe 100 casualties or no more than that. What we see in that film, April 9th, is again, a huge tension as these sort of poor bastards on bicycles try and hold off the Third Reich. But you get the sense that that is never going to win.
Mm.
What I got from Commando's Raid at Dawn and
Strike at Dawn.
God, I always get that wrong. And The King's Choice is that you get the sense that Norway is not going to go quietly. Yeah. They're going to fight.
Yeah.
From the king right down to Paul Mooney.
Yeah. No, I agree. And,
which we love them for that,
and,
don't we?
And I think there is a dose of big dose of pride in Norway about how they reacted. I mean, they couldn't have stopped it, but how they kept fighting it and kept fighting it and kept fighting it. And we'll go back to Norway later in the series when we get to stuff like the Heroes of Telemark.
Yeah.
When it comes to the heavy water and so on and so forth. So Norway is very much within the European theatre a key country during the war.
And we're going to keep coming back to it.
Yeah.
Now, here's the exciting news. That's me rubbing my hands together with glee because
our next film is
Dunkirk. Not just one,
two
Dunkirks.
Yeah, we're not sure. Which one should we start with? Should we start with the big one?
Shall we?
Yeah.
Let's start with the big one and then we'll do the
I think it's fair enough to our very patient listeners who
to finally come up with a war film.
Oh, don't you start. Here he goes again. It's a war film. They're all war films. Oh, finally a war film. What, 2 years in a war film? They're all war films.
Well, actually, we're only about nine months in.
9 months.
It's taken us a year.
Well, it's important not to skip some stuff, you know. And unfortunately, we probably will have to do that. But anyway, it's Dunkirk.
So, ladies and gentlemen, get ready for some Tom Hardy, Kenneth Branagh, Mark Rylance fabulousness.
And what's his name? That bloke from that crap band, Harry Styles.
Harry Styles!
Yeah.
I still don't know which one he is. They all look the same.
No, they don't.
Don't get me started.
Okay.
All right, then. Listen, thanks for your patience, everyone, in our long absence and silence. We're back.
Nice to be back. And back in the same room, so we're very happy about that. Hopefully, now we can be back in the same cabinet war room. We're going to be able to bash out a few more of these.
Yeah.
Until next time...
You've been listening to...
The Foxhole Companion!